Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, other stuff at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, Jack-Jack!
Yay!
How are you doing, Jack-Jack?
I'm doing pretty good, John.
We've got a very, very special guest on tonight's show, and I will announce that in just a moment. But before that, guess what?
What's that, John?
This segment brought to you by Tactical Night Vision Company. The night is dark and full of terrors, or at least it used to be. But now we have the technology to fight the night, and TNVC is your one-stop shop for all your dark fighting needs. From the TNV PVS 14 Night Vision Goggle to the Maul C1 Plus and everything in between, TNVC can outfit your defense against the dark arts. It doesn't matter if it's your lost keys, the enemy, or that little kid from down the street that likes to wander off. TNVC has what you need to find things in the dark. TNVC, now, with financing. Own or finance the night. So my very favorite part of that ad right there is now, because of what I do every other time, everyone's just waiting.
For this horrible thing to happen.
Yeah, for he's going to change it. He's going to go off script, because he always goes off script. But wait, where is it? Where's the dark turn? I don't know, man. Can't all be Bert strips in here.
It's like M. Night Shyamalan. He should just one time just do a movie with no twist.
I guess. So anyway, joining us on tonight's episode, it's Jack-Jack. If anybody's been paying attention to the internet or the tactical community, Jack has taken, it's like Liam Neeson up in here, taken a very, very cool position with another company. That does not mean that he's not going to be doing the show in the future. It means he's going to be doing the show less in the future because he's got better things to do than spend time with me anymore. So, but as a special thing for you guys, since I know that you all like Jack more than me, we're going to interview Jack tonight. So anyway, Jack, who are you?
Hi, I'm Jack-Jack, and
The urge to just reach over and turn your microphone off and be, "Fool, dude, get out!" You like long walks on the beach?
I do like long walks on the beach, but the background is...
Long walks on the beach are completely different and probably frowned upon. Anyway, continue.
The background for me is, for 9 years, I was a bouncer and bodyguard in Atlanta. About halfway through that time, I had an incident that let me know I wasn't as good as I thought I was.
Mm-hmm.
And that started me down training. 5 years after that, I had a pretty disruptive breakup that allowed me to become free. So for the next 5 to 6 years, I pretty much tactical hoboed myself around. I worked for a bunch of different companies, doing a bunch of different things, learning a lot about the industry, but mostly about myself.
That's so sweet, Jack. I feel like this should be a book cover now. And now that I love myself.
Yeah, now that I love myself. Before this last job, I was obviously the co-host on Ballistic Radio for about a year and three quarters.
Almost 2 years.
Yeah, almost 2 years.
I don't know. It went so quick. It was horrible every day of it.
All of it very bad.
The smells.
So many long drives.
Oh, God.
And then very recently, after I made a move back to Atlanta for some family reasons, I was approached by Gap Marketing to head up their social media marketing team, and I took it.
I know. I was there. So I guess what I want to start off with is, and I know, like, we make jokes about it on the show, but you are a big dude.
Yeah.
6'7", 375 pounds. I'll use your driver's license weight.
Yeah. It's okay. Who knows?
We can use my driver's license weight, too. I'm 215. No, I'm not. Anyway, but what's interesting to me is that a lot of people rely on, especially in like the bouncer gig, because I've done that gig before, just rely on being a big dude. And even in the personal protection gig, rely on just being a big dude. And you had an event that, and I don't think I've ever heard what the event was. I don't know if you want to tell it on air or not.
I'll tell it.
But you kind of figured out that, hey, maybe that didn't matter. So what's the story there?
I was closing a bar down. I want to say I was 23, 24, somewhere in that range. And I had thrown a guy out earlier that night. He was a Somali immigrant, so he did not speak very good English. And he showed back up at the bar about 3 a.m., banging on the door. I was the only guy there. At this time, I had armed myself because we kept guns in a safe.
Mm-hmm.
I walked over with my Gen 2 Glock 22 with burnt-out night sights and a 10-round magazine full of FMJ, no round in the chamber.
I mean, like you do.
In a paddle holster of a name I will not say.
Nice.
I open the door. I'm like, hey man, you just need to get out of here. There's nothing going on here. And he goes, you know what? I got something for you. And he drove his hand into his front pocket. Everything got really slow for me.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up kicking the door open into him and clumsily getting my pistol out. And as I was lining up the sights,
first you produced your pistol.
Yeah. First I produced my pistol. I suddenly realized there was no round in the chamber. And I was like, oh, crap. And
this is how I die.
Yeah, I went to get around in the chamber, and about that time his hands come up. He has a flat black object in it, and my brain is just screaming. And a moment of street light catches it, and it's his wallet.
Hmm.
He had been going to give me a tip. He thought he could pay me to get back in the bar. And that really shook me up. It was the first time I ever pointed a gun at somebody. It would not be the last.
Like you do.
And I got him out of there. I reholstered. I finished closing the bar down. And I drove to my mom's house. And she found me on her steps at 7 a.m. because I just didn't know where else to go.
Right.
And she's like, what's wrong? I told her about it, which was a mistake.
Yeah.
And I had to do a lot of soul searching of like, maybe just not owning a gun is enough. Maybe there's something more to it. And that's when I started seeking out training. I started seeking out competition. I started making myself better with a gun.
Right.
Because it was an incident of, it was a no shoot that mm-hmm. kind of looked like a shoot. And I've always kind of had this self-doubt about, what if I had a round in the chamber?
Mm-hmm.
Would I have processed that information as best? And now when I can look back in AAR, that event versus my most recent event of having drawn a gun on somebody, it's a night and day mental difference of like, okay, I'm processing information, I'm working a flashlight, I'm controlling a scene of people around me. What changed? Well, what changed was training.
Had it just not occurred to you, I guess, that one, you could be wrong, or two, make a mistake, or what?
I mean, it was one of those things that I thought I had it.
Mm-hmm.
I come from a family of people who've been in a lot of gunfights, so mm-hmm. I'd grown up with those stories. They never discussed training.
Yeah.
I never got that discussion. And I, after which, went back and talked to them. And I was like, what training did you take before this happened? And some of them were like, oh, yeah, I took a police class, or I was in the military, and blah, 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 blah. They'd had some form of formal training. The one who inspired me the most and helped me the most through it was my grandmother, actually.
Whom I have heard stories of.
Who had been a bail enforcement agent, had been in several fatal shootings where she had won all of them. So she was like, well, yeah, I took training. I was trained by these guys. And it was very, very informal. But no, I just didn't think about it. It wasn't something I thought about. And I literally remember like Yahoo searching gun training ?
Right. Right. No, it's funny too, because you know, it seems like everyone I meet has this one story where, oh yeah, this is when I figured out that I was not as good as I thought I was. And they might have more than one story because we tend to forget. We got to go to break. We're talking with Jack. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with Jack Jack on not his last episode of Ballistic Radio, but the point of less episodes on Ballistic Radio as he becomes engrossed in bigger and better things. Which
the show's going to get better is what we're saying.
Well, yeah, I'll actually have to find somebody that is likable for real reasons versus fake reasons.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, you know. So anyway, we were discussing how you had kind of you had like this modeling going on around you of people that had been successful in shootings on a number of occasions, but they had never brought up training, and then you find yourself in this incident. You didn't really know that there was firearms training.
Yeah, it just wasn't something I was aware of.
How many people, how many people do you think get into a job that requires them to deal with violent encounters on a, if not a day-to-day basis, a semi-regular basis, are never properly prepared for it, whether they're trained or not?
The vast majority, especially if it's in the private security field. A lot of guys have a lot of ego invested in that job and not a lot of like, hey, let's actually work through the plan and let's plan to come home today and let's make it a safe day. It's a lot of, no, we got this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I realized that as I got older. I had a lot of mentors that helped me along that path. But, man, when I first got there, it was like, no, it's about how good I am today, not about like, hey, what's the plan?
Yeah.
What's going to work out? And we just sort of made it up as we went along. But I think if you look at it, most guys who and girls who go towards those professions, I'd say 80% of them haven't really sunk a lot of thought into it. It's a natural feel, so they feel good about it.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that, yeah, thankfully, in almost every instance that I can think of, anyone that I have ever dealt with in a professional capacity that either I thought intended to do violence towards me or did do violence towards me wasn't very good at it. And that it's funny how many mistakes can be covered by the other guy just being really horrible, like worse than you.
Yeah.
You know, do you think that enough people pay attention to stuff like that or really give consideration to how many success stories are predicated on the other guy just being really horrible?
Yeah, I've won a lot of fights,
mm-hmm.
but I'd say the overwhelming majority of the fights I won were against guys who were smaller than me, weaker than me, and really drunk.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh man, I've got hundreds of wins against a guy who wasn't prepared, wasn't ready, and frankly, probably doesn't remember why he started this.
You know, it's funny. Do you know what I'm really good at? Like historically, like really, really good at
what?
Removing drunk college kids from bars without getting hurt. You know, it's funny though how if that opponent changes somewhat. Like I had a guy gotten out of prison,
mm-hmm.
Throw me down a flight of stairs. That sucked. And I was completely not expecting that. I mean, like on my list of activities for that day, it wasn't, oh, this guy that really means it is going to try really bad to hurt me. I will say this, luckily, stomping on someone's head when you've only got flip-flops on, not very effective, thankfully for me.
I went through a similar transition where I started with drunk rednecks, moved to drunk bikers, which was a exhilarating time in my life.
Mm.
And then very shortly thereafter was hired by a college drinking bar in the city. And I went from having a very aggressive profile and very much a, if you look at me wrong, if you make the wrong statement, we are going to be in a very hard fight, because that's what bikers do.
Right.
They have a culture of violence. They are aware of it and they're happy about it. They engage in it because they enjoy it. Whereas a college kid will say things like, I'm gonna shoot you. just because he's dumb. You know, he heard a rap song once, so now he's hard. And I had to quickly learn how, like, to throttle responses, which is probably if something I'd love to see in the training industry, teaching people to throttle their response. You need to be able to go from 0 to 100 and back to 0 very fast.
Yeah. So how do you think, do you think the problem there is that there's too many binary decision-making processes inside of training where it's either a threat, and I'm doing bunny ears around that, the official Ballistic Radio bunny ears, or it's a not threat and there's very little in between, and there's not a threat that becomes a not threat but is maybe still a threat later on?
I will say that absolutely. The vast majority of people I dealt with were never not threats or threats. They existed in this huge gray zone where they could go either direction.
Mm-hmm.
And that took a lot of management. A lot of like, okay, what's he doing right now? What's my environment? And what's my risk factor here? And that's going to gauge my response.
Do you think that enough attention is paid to the fact that we oftentimes, through training, escalate situations beyond what they need to be escalated to, in the guise of personal safety? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not something that I think it takes time to learn how to not be there, but you have a whole list of responses from I'm just enjoying my life and everything is good, to why is there a loud ringing in my ear and I bet the cops are coming.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do a lot of stuff in the in-between. I made a video called My Bad 20 where I talked about being able to bribe yourself out of situations, being able to just talk to somebody. I think a lot of times we do a lot of get back from me, unknown person, where you can just easily go, no, thanks, man.
Yeah.
And completely disengage from a situation. And it's hard to teach a class where you would go, okay, guys, today we're going to come in and you're going to learn how to lie under pressure to de-escalate a situation very quickly. No one's going to sign up for that class.
I think a lot of people actually would sign up. I'd sign up for that class.
Lying for fun and profit.
You can do that once you're completely severed from Ballistic Radio. We are no longer affiliated with the things that Jack is saying. No, but seriously, though, it's almost like you've got this shiny thing that you know how to do, but you've never really done it before. And, like, you know that it's supposed to fit into this situation somewhere. And, hey, I guess it fits into here. And you don't quite spend as much time as you should on just like, hey, bro, sorry, you know, whatever. And honestly, I'm historically very bad at being the talker.
Mm-hmm.
I was never the designated talker. They actually knew I wasn't really good at it. And I've still not spent nearly as much time working on it as I should. It actually reminds me of Mel Gibson's character in Signs, where they come running out of the house and Joaquin Phoenix's character goes one way, like cursing to scare who they think are the neighbors. And then Mel Gibson is, I am enraged with anger right now. You know what I mean?
Right. Talking under stress is difficult. And when I first started being in a lot of fights because I was a bouncer, you would get this like mush mouth where you're like, Herbert, I said, I said, stop.
Yeah.
You know, like you can't talk. And I was kind of forced. I had a manager pull me aside and she said, you know what? I'm tired of you beating people up. You now have to talk to them. And I was forced to talk to them.
And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, I'm like, I don't like talking to them. You know, I'm not a talker. I was actually an introvert. Like, I didn't like talking to people. And she forced me to get good at it.
Well, you still don't like talking to people, Jack. You've just learned to do it.
Yeah, I've just learned all these skills that help.
We got to go to break, so we'll continue this conversation with Jack. Jack, right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better! This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it? But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it, and that's where Surefire comes in. From the USB rechargeable 300-lumen Sidekick to the 500-lumen X300 Ultra or M600 Scout Light, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell, "Aziz Light!" ever again. Doesn't matter if you're shining a light at potential threat or just helping your friends see through their eyelids. Ooh, capillaries. When you need all the lumens for longer, you need Surefire. And now, as a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners, you can get 30% off at the Surefire.com web store by entering the discount code All the Lumens, that is ALLTHELUMENS, 30% off everything except batteries and suppressors, at Surefire.com. Anyway, we were talking with Jack-Jack. Jack-Jack, how are you this evening, Mike?
Delightful.
I don't like where this is going at all. Anyway, so we are discussing some of your experiences and some of the things that have shaped you. One of the things that I think is interesting about your perspective, at least in the last couple years of hanging out with you, is you are much more willing to examine sources of information that most people discount offhand. Why is that, do you think?
If I'm leaning towards what you're trying to say, is I experienced a lot in my life where I existed.
You look at hood rat things more than the rest of us do, Jack.
I existed in a moral gray zone where I was both friends with cops and friends with criminals.
Yeah.
That's just who you run into late at night. It's cops and criminals, and you're going to get to know both these guys, and they know each other.
Yeah.
You know, there's this lie that they don't know each other. Trust me, they do. And it was funny because I would sometimes get a cop would come by and tell me about a shooting that had occurred nearby. And I'm like, thanks, man. Thanks for letting me know. And then a couple of days later, I'd end up meeting the guy who had done that shooting.
Right.
And the stories that they had, and there were plenty of things where guys on both sides were either misdirecting or lying because of whatever. I learned that there is no difference. There is no difference really in whatever has caused this shooting. It's still going to be two people inside the United States, roughly equipped along the same lines, are going to get into a confrontation that leads to a shooting. And when a lot of people hear, gangland violence, they just click off.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't apply to me. I'm not selling drugs. I'm not running with a crew. I don't wear red or blue. You know, I don't have to hear this. And to me, it's like, if I remove all those other things, it was still a shooting in my area. What can I learn from it?
Well, and so the thing, too, that's interesting to me is that for all this talk of how we're concerned about the bad guys and all that, shouldn't we be paying attention to what the bad guys do?
Right. Like we not too long ago had a shooting in Atlanta, 60 rounds fired in the course of, I think, a minute or less between four shooters, and we found five empty guns on the scene.
Well, and so, like, there was just a shooting in a nightclub here in Cincinnati, and, like, initial reports were, oh, my God, it's another Pulse. And, like, I talked to one of the first officers that was on the scene, and I haven't been following the news, so I don't know what they've released on it now, and if I'm divulging information on an active investigation, whoops. But they recovered, like, multiple guns, and, you know, multiple guns, multiple empty guns, multiple guns that people dropped.
Yeah.
Trying to get out of. You know,
they're like, this isn't my shooting and the cops will be here soon, so I'm going to get rid of this thing that would tie me to it.
Right. Stuff like that. And it's like, you know, maybe having an understanding of how these dynamics work in case you happen to be somewhere public when one of them starts, maybe that's a good idea.
I will say that the person who is the closest to talking, and he actually is, he's the guy talking about it, Dr. William April's Unthinkable class, examines a lot about violent criminal offenders, but he also just talks about criminals in general.
Yeah.
And the idea that they're really that much different than you or me is a false one. It allows you to project an easy enemy. It's going to be much more difficult for you to go, hey, the things that's going to make this guy commit this crime are the same reasons I go to work every day. And guess what? This is his job.
Yeah.
And it's not easy. It's very scary for him to. And this is what I can expect to happen.
Well, and I think, too, that there's a lot of othering that occurs where, You know, you see it with sports teams, sports ball. You see it with all, you know, politics or whatever, where you people that are naturally non-confrontational or whatever don't, you know, they need to work themselves up to it. And one of the ways they work themselves up to it is by, you know, oh, this person isn't like me. There's something different. They're not a person. And I think that once you realize that and realize that while you might not understand their motivations, at least accept that they do have motivations that make sense to them, you're better off.
I was at a lecture for a...
I thought you were going to say a rave. I don't know why.
it was a non-standard lecture, but they were talking about what they called the gift of hate and how we must get away with it, you know, get away from it. And it's when you are young and passionate, it is easy to hate, and that hate will give you strength and it will give you resolve. As you get older, that hate will probably leave you in a violent encounter. And what we must strive for, even as young men, was to have no hate whatsoever.
Yeah.
To do this with complete lack of emotion so we could do it in complete clarity and achieve the best result. And that was something that, like, blew my mind. And they talked about a lot of other things that I don't want to get into just yet. And there was a lot of historical references, but one of the ones I'll touch on is people have this idea of the berserker was this mad, crazy fighter who hated everything. The reality is, no, he had just transcended past that. He did not need to hate.
Well, and when you know, so I'm friends with a lot of people actually that are professional face shooters, and not in the California sense, but like in the I made a joke, you know, like global war on terror, stuff like that. And they are very cold and calculating if they're at a high enough level, you know. And one of the things that I think is really lost upon most people is the importance of emotional detachment inside of those situations anyway, just to keep yourself out of trouble. But anyway, what else is interesting to you about all of this? What is something that not enough people talk about?
Past 5 minutes.
As far as conflicts that last past 5 minutes, or just...
What you're going to do past 5 minutes. We do a lot of talking about, like, okay, this is what you'll be in the fight, and then a couple of days later, you're going to have to deal with this legal thing. But 5 minutes after that fight happens is where more people make bad decisions than anything else.
Yeah.
And I would love to see more people talking about post-stressful incident stuff. We are seeing some talks about it globally, but 5 minutes after a fight, you have a lot to deal with, and the cops aren't going to be there 5 minutes after.
Depending.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have been... at situations where the cops were there 2 seconds afterwards because they just happened to be there. I've also been where it's like, oh, we had shots fired. 15 minutes later, the cops showed up to be like, hey, is everything cool now? I was a ways away.
Yeah.
So it's like,
oh, I was busy.
Yeah, I was busy. I was napping. You know, whatever. I'm not casting judgment. I'm just saying you need to know what your plan is at 5 minutes, because you can't be, you know, when the gunfire starts and this is now a fight for your life, you can lose as much emotional control as you really want to, and it might cost you your life, but you'll make that decision for yourself. 5 minutes after, you need to have complete emotional control. You need to be in control of you and your situation, your gun handling in particular, and present yourself collectedly. You know, like, more collected, sorry.
Yeah. We'll talk about that a little bit more. We got to go to break right now. We're talking with Jack. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. So we're talking with Jack about Jack things. Well, radio friendly.
Well, we haven't talked about Taylor Swift at all, and that's a huge part of my life.
Oh, it's okay. I'm going to tell Joe. See, you've ruined a surprise. The bumper music for this episode is all Taylor Swift.
Oh my, yes, yes.
Joe's like, okay. So you're talking about emotional control and the importance of having it. I will say this from my own personal experience and having a mistaken felony arrest performed on me where guns were pointed at me that were thumb cocked out of the holster. I was very happy after the fact that I was in control of that situation as far as not doing anything that would have been perfectly justified other than the fact that I'd be dead afterwards, because that's not the time to argue. And it seems like a lot of people get really concerned about being, and you can extend this to all sorts of aspects of life, being right in the moment versus thinking about what the long-term consequences are of the actions. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. One of my more exciting incidences, and I won't get into it.
It's a thing, but it happened.
It's a thing. It happened. Post that thing, I was sitting there quasi in shock and started babbling to the EMT and the cop to try and justify what had occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And the cop knew me.
Yeah. He's like, hey, shut up.
And he was like, I have something else to do. And the EMT walked over and grabbed my shoulder and said, you need to be quiet now. And this was post a lot of training. Yeah. I want to state that. Like, this wasn't me fresh off the boat. And I suddenly realized, oh, my God, you're right. He goes, it's cool. We got you. And that was because, like, these guys knew me. They partied at my clubs. I took care of them. I made sure that they were safe. They were going to help me. You will not have that opportunity.
Yeah.
I am lucky that the response to several incidents were friends of mine.
Mm-hmm.
You won't be that lucky. So gaining that emotional control, and a lot of it is stop giving yourself the excuse. Stop saying, well, I was upset that day, so I had to do something. You know, I had to pity, scream, or throw something at a wall. Take away those emotional excuses and force yourself to go, no, I'm going to exercise discipline. I'm going to exercise control, and I'm not going to allow myself to vent until I'm with my tribe, until I'm with my people, until I'm perfectly secure. I'm going to lock this stuff in because I've got more work to do.
So what you're saying, Jack, is the correct answer is to take all your emotions, put them in a little ball, swallow them so they're deep down in the pit of your stomach, and then lock them in a dark room and never acknowledge them or talk about them. That's exactly what you're saying,
no,
right? No. Just say that.
No.
Say that.
Yes.
Let me have this.
In a way, yes, but you need to find your tribe. You need to find your people that you can express yourself in a healthy, controlled manner. I have people that if I call and go, hey, I need you to be here, I need to talk, they'll be there. But right after that moment is when you're going to want to talk the most. And that's not when you need to be talking. You need to be quiet. You need to be reserved. Your critical stress incident, your violent encounter is not over until you're home.
Yeah.
And even then, you need to not be on Facebook with it.
Wait. If I don't post it on Facebook, bro,
how do they know it happened?
Yeah,
it's
right?
Like being in the gym.
I gotta say, so that's like, I agree with you, yes, but you have to admit, if you ever walk into a scenario where there is a jihadi wearing a suicide vest,
I'll be on Facebook.
Hold on, who has just beheaded a bus full of nuns, and you pop that guy, you're telling me you wouldn't get a selfie?
Oh, no, that'll be on the gram immediately.
Oh, okay.
Hashtag bun bun things.
Sub-second draw this. No, so seriously, as far as, here's what's really intriguing, I think, about your approach to stuff, and we kind of already discussed this or whatever, but you're a guy that is intimidating, is physically skilled, stronger than most people, and you spend a lot of time avoiding and de-escalating situations. I think there's a lesson there for everybody. How do you think people really need to, or excuse me, how do you think we do a better job of getting that across to people, that that's a thing that they need to do?
The first time you figure out that this will be a physical toll, if you're doing... I figured it out when it was like, oh, I was just in 7 fights tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I am physically exhausted. I guess I should talk to someone and see if I can avoid an 8th fight. another busted lip, another broken rib. I had a girlfriend who spent a lot of time patching me up. I can't tell you the number of 5 a.m. sitting in the kitchen, ice, tape, glue, trying to put myself back together physically to go and do it again. When you figure out that that could be you, and you could be crippled forever, you could be dead, you start thinking, wow, maybe I should de-escalate.
Yeah, right.
Maybe this is a cost.
Yeah.
And sure, it's a lot cooler for me to tell you the hundreds of fight stories I have, but I have thousands of de-escalation stories.
Right.
And when I started, I have guys that'll come to me and they're like, hey man, I'm going to go bounce at a bar. I'm like, you should, because it's going to teach you how to solve your problems. And like, what? No, it's going to teach you how to talk things out and be calm and be rational and do all that stuff. And I hate to say it, but the movie Roadhouse is amazing for that. It will teach you about de-escalation.
So what's funny about that movie is, like, everybody makes fun of it, but anybody that was actually a bouncer, I mean, loves that movie.
Yeah, it's the
movie. I mean, the last part is ridiculous, yeah, but like...
A polar bear for all of me.
Yeah.
But yeah, he talks about the fact that, hey, you don't get the option to be upset today.
Yeah.
And if it comes to your life and your livelihood,
mm-hmm.
you don't get the option to be upset today. You don't. You have to be in control.
Yeah.
Now, when that moment comes, ride for Wrath, ride for Rowan, and a Red Dawn, but you need to be in complete control of who you are so that you can come home.
Right. All right. What'd you think of the Last Jedi trailer?
Oh, man, it's a tease, but...
You saw the AT-ATs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Even more so, breathe.
Yeah.
Just breathe.
Well, so what's funny about that, so now we're on to nerd stuff, because I don't know when we're going to get to nerd out on air together again. Okay, just give me this one list.
Just this one, guys.
what's funny about that is I only know one truth. You know, and who's actually saying that in the trailer? Because if you listen to it, it could be Kylo Ren, it could be Luke, it could be Benicio Del Toro's character.
Mm-hmm. There's a...
I think there's some misdirection going on there.
Well, we know for a fact that due to the German translation, The Last Jedi is a plural
thing. No, it's not. So they interviewed the director, and he's like, yeah, that came up, and I'm like shocked that people are making that a thing. That was just in an interview talked about.
They're so good at misdirecting, though, and it's one of those things of like, I have some theorem. But I almost don't even indulge my theorem because I like to experience it pure.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I want to see it so bad that I'm like, but then I don't want it to be ruined for me, so I don't.
We live in the age of the internet.
Instant gratification.
Anything can be ruined for you.
Right.
So.
I still remember Steve Fisher. With The Force Awakens.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm going to defriend Steve probably about a week or two out. Just like, nope.
Yeah. So anyway, on that note, it is the end of the show. So I would like to say this, Jack. I wish you all the best in your upcoming endeavors and all that. Hopefully you will still be around as your time allows. But it's been fun, dude.
It's been a ride, and I've enjoyed all of it.
That's a lie.
No, it's not. Hold on. Adventures... are only called adventures afterwards, and that's when we speak of them fondly. In the moments of pain and in the moments of suck, it may not feel good, but afterwards is when we truly appreciate the moment.
I'll remember that the next time I ask you to rip up my carpet. Anyway, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. And hey... keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.